shape and justice for all.
You have several changes to today's agenda. Under the consent agenda, item B9 is the middle of a resolution designating the Director of Public Works as the authorized representative to submit grant applications for integrated regional water management grants pursuant to the Water Security Clean Drinking Water Coastal and Beach Protection Act of 2002. All districts. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting that the title of this item be amended, correcting the cover sheet to read submittal of resolutions. The resolution that was inadvertently left out of the is attached for your approval. Item B10 is submittal of a resolution approving a revolving fund appropriation in the amount of $80,000 for a Camborne Place and Burton Drive Cooperative Road Project in the community of Cambria. 2, authorize the auditor controller to encumber any unused 2004-2005 fiscal year appropriation for this project and reappropriate this amount to cost center 150-450-0000 for fiscal year 2004-2005. And 3, a bid opening report for this project, second district. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign resolution, budget adjustment, and documents with A.J. Diani Construction Company in the amount of $189,475. Staff is requesting the title of this item be amended, correcting the cover sheet to read submittal of resolutions. The resolution that was inadvertently left out is attached for your approval. Under added items on consent, item B20 is submittal of a resolution proclaiming May 2005 as Paso Robles Wine Month. Recommend approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Item B21 is request to approve an amended agreement with the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation to provide county funds in support of Children's Health Initiative. Recommend approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Under closed session, you have some added items under existing litigation. Number 8, Santa Margarita Area Residents Together versus the County of San Luis Obispo. Number 9, Harker Wade versus County of San Luis Obispo. Number 10, Building a Better Environment versus County of San Luis Obispo. Number 11, Maria Vista Estates, case number CV050242 versus County of San Luis Obispo. And 12, State of California et al. Versus Babbitt et al. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. And that's your changes.
Thank you very much. With that, we will go to the presentation calendar.
Move approval.
Second?
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. May we have a roll call, please?
Who do you have as the motion maker and second? Mr. Overton or
Harry and Jerry.
Harry and Jerry, okay.
Seniority counts.
Okay. Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. So we will move to our presentation calendar. If Judge Money would come to the microphone, please.
Morning.
Good morning. We have a resolution to be read for you.
For me?
For you.
That's not a citation. It's a resolution.
Would you take the stand, please? Would you raise your right hand?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It gives me great pleasure to read this resolution honoring Judge Money. I'd like to also have his family come forward in the back. We've got grandchildren. Surprise.
And his little brother, Duffy, yeah, little brother Duffy, yeah.
Come forward. You can get up here. The reason it's a real honor for me is Judge Money was the assistant district attorney when I started my law enforcement career. He's been a great friend, someone I've admired, someone I've looked up to, someone that's done a great job in the criminal justice system from being a assistant district attorney, and judge. And I don't think I've ever met anybody that's any finer than Judge Money. Whereas Judge Money began his career with the San Luis Obispo County as a deputy district attorney in 1965, and whereas Judge Money began a pilot drug treatment control court in 1997, and whereas this pilot treatment court was converted to adult drug court in July of 1999 through a grant received by the County of San Luis Obispo, And whereas, as part of the program, hundreds of drug court graduates have in their possession a keychain with Judge Money's picture on it as a reminder to them of their consequences should they begin using drugs again. And whereas Judge Money's belief that people can change and his inspiration and willingness to take a risk by providing a foundation for San Luis Obispo County courts to establish treatment courts. And whereas Judge Money has positively influenced hundreds of families during his tenure as judge. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors that Judge Money always be known as the father of drug court in San Luis Obispo County, and that he is wished the best upon his retirement.
We line up here if you want to take pictures. Come forward.
Wait,
you got it?
You didn't realize we had protocols. Why
don't you stand here in the center and look?
I just like to say something.
Well, you're going to say
something. I'm a medic. You can say something.
Jeff, better hurry before you guys start talking.
Would you come forward too, please?
You can't.
Yeah, you can't talk now. We gotta wait. Okay.
I'm not used to being told what to do.
At least not by me.
But this is a complete surprise. I thought I was down here for something else, drug court week or something. So I want to thank everybody, especially the board, and for all their kind remarks and all their support over the years. You know, really, I'm just a small part of drug court, and if I've been any assistance at all to people in their recovery, it certainly is a great pleasure to me. But really, the people that do all the work are the counselors and the probation officers that are sitting here day to day to day. You cannot believe the efforts that go into some of these individuals with their disease. And they are the heart and soul of drug court, and without their commitment and dedication, nothing would get done. And I think that they deserve all the credit that goes with this successful program, because it is successful, and it's a great pleasure to see so many people get into recovery and improve their lives and lead happy and sober lives. So this program is really popular with the judges. In fact, judges want to do it, as a matter of fact. So it's something that they look forward to, because a lot of our work is not seen the benefits of our efforts, but this certainly is. So, again, I want to thank you all very much, and thank you for the resolution.
Don't go away, because the drug court resolution is the very next one following, and you've already made your statements, but that's all right. Don't go away.
Good morning. Kim Barrett, Chief Probation Officer. I'd just like to thank Judge Money for all that he has done for the many families over the years on behalf of all of the probation officers who have worked with him. He's been extremely creative, and if it weren't for him, drug court would have never happened. Thank you, Judge Money.
Paul Hyman, County Drug and Alcohol Services. I also want to acknowledge Judge Money, especially from the treatment side, to be able to have our treatment folks go in front of the bench and to give treatment recommendations and to have Judge Money honor those in support of the treatment and recovery for individuals has really given a boost. And I also want to say, and I know the drug court resolution is next, but one of the key things that Judge Money has brought is a collaborative spirit to where we've been able to weave together the probation department, the treatment folks over at Drug and Alcohol and the treatment folks at our community provider mental health systems and the court, the DA, the public defender. Judge Money brought people together, and I think he needs to be acknowledged for that. Thank you, Judge Money.
We will now go into proclaiming May 2005 as Drug Court Month, if the judge would like to return to the microphone. Okay, whereas drug courts provide the focus and leadership for countywide anti-drug systems, bringing together public safety professionals and other community partners in the fight against drug abuse and criminality, and whereas results of more than 100 program evaluations and at least 3 experimental studies have yielded definitive evidence that drug courts increase treatment retention and reduce substance abuse and crime among drug-involved individuals and juvenile and adult offenders. And whereas the National Association of Drug Court Professionals has recognized May 2005 as National Drug Court Month, and whereas San Luis Obispo County's adult drug court program was launched on July 1, 1999, and whereas over 520 individuals and their families in this county have benefited from these programs, and whereas the community's willingness to embrace this model has given hope to those in recovery and their families. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors that May 2005 be proclaimed as Drug Court Month, recognizing the practitioners and participants who make drug court work and the significant contributions that drug courts have made and continue to make in reducing drug usage and crime. And so now, if you'd like to come forward and get this resolution. If anyone would like to make a comment, I'm rearranging the entire order of the presentation calendar, so forgive me. Go ahead.
Kim Barrett, Chief Probation Officer. We are very proud to proclaim May as Drug Court Month, and thank you for the resolution. As Paul Hyman said, it is a collaboration. It would not work with all of the many, many partners. We have many of our partners here today, including, of course, Drug and Alcohol Services, the probation officers, mental health systems, and we're very proud that we now have a juvenile drug court and a dependency drug court that have started in this county. So it has been expanded greatly. And again, I thank all of the collaborators who have been so involved. I'd now like to introduce a former drug court graduate and a staff person from Mental Health Systems. If you could come forward.
Hello. My name is Violet Sugi, and I want to tell you just a little bit about myself, how my life was before drug court, what happened, and what my life is like now. I know that there's at least one person that knows my history. I'm from San Luis Obispo.
That's kind of personal, Jerry.
I'm from San Luis Obispo. I was raised in Avila Beach. I just had a birthday a couple weeks ago, and I'm 54 years old. Most women don't like to tell their age, but I wanted to give you an idea of how many years I used drugs. I started using drugs when I was 13 years old. At age 14, I ran away from home and went to Hawaii. At age 15, I became an emancipated minor. What that smart thinking got me was tried as an adult when I eventually was arrested. So I did what any smart drug addict would do. I married the governor of Hawaii's nephew at age 16. That helped a great deal when I was sentenced. When I got out, I didn't want to use drugs or be around anybody that did, so I became a bartender. There goes my smart thinking again. I hadn't been a drinker until then, but I quickly became a daily drinker. However, there were times that I didn't use drugs or drink. They were few and far between. In 1986, I knew I had to do something about my addiction. I started to go to 12-step meetings, and it worked for about a year and a half. I had an emergency surgery. My drug of choice was heroin, so that first shot of morphine that was given to me in the recovery room sent me off and running. I could not stop using drugs. Every day I would have to find ways and means to get drugs. There weren't many days that I didn't go without a shot of heroin. I was getting arrested before I could get arraigned on the previous charges. Needless to say, my life was totally out of control. I was even arrested one time on my way to turn myself in to do weekends. I was arrested on my way to jail. At one point, I went to court and asked Judge Ream to remand me. Going to jail was the only way I could stop using drugs. I found myself in court one more time when my attorney asked me if I was willing to do the drug court program. I said yes. However, it was not that simple. I was denied twice. Drug court wanted my husband as a client, but not me. I was told that there was a weight limit on court files, that mine was too big and heavy to get from the clerk's desk up to the judge's. However, I was finally accepted into drug court. That was the first of many things I like to call my drug court miracles. I thought I could do the drug court program by faking it. I thought I could continue using drugs with my husband and get away with it. After all, I was good at faking tests. I'd done it for years. Eventually, we got caught. My husband went to prison, and I got to start drug court all over again. It's another drug court miracle. When I finally surrendered and gave the drug court program what was asked of me, my life became a lot better. It got better quickly. Everything that the drug court staff had told me was coming true. They were not lying to me. I became able to trust again, another drug court miracle. Drug court taught me how to stop lying and to trust people. I would lie for no reason at all. I had lied for so long I didn't know the difference. Drug court taught me the difference. I had absolutely no self-esteem when I got to drug court. Drug court taught me how to love myself and heal myself, how to regain some credibility, how to be a member of my own family again. Drug court taught me how to give back to the community that I wreaked havoc on for so many years. Drug court taught me how to be a better wife, daughter, and sister, a better stepmother and grandmother. It took me 26 months to complete an 18-month drug court program. I didn't want to leave the program. I felt secure and safe while I was there. When it came time for me to graduate, they let me stay another 3 months, another drug court miracle. My husband got out of prison, and we paid off all our bills. He had a Harley, and I had a Cadillac. I had 3 years clean and sober, and he had 13 months clean and sober. As soon as I graduated from drug court, I was going to retire. I had quit my job. We had the rest of our lives to live clean and sober together. My husband suddenly died as a direct result of using drugs. He died from hepatitis C. I took him to the hospital, and he died 24 hours later. His affairs were not in order. He had no will. I could not get access to our bank accounts. Everything was frozen. I had nothing, or so I thought. The drug court program manager called me that night that my husband died. I knew then that I had drug court and all the support I needed. The drug court team came to my husband's funeral. They held me up. They prayed with me and for me. They were there, before, during, and after. Needless to say, it didn't take too long before I was homeless and on the streets. I lost the house, the car blew up the same day my husband died, and I had no job. But I had a lifelong membership in drug court. I graduated the drug court program the day after my husband's funeral. I made it through Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's without using or drinking. The grief was horrendous. Grief was one thing that I did not know how to do, but I did know how to go to jail. So I drank, and my probation officer came and picked me up, and I thought, oh, good, I'll have some time to sort things out. I was thinking at least 6 months, but that didn't happen. I got only 2 days, another drug court miracle. When I got out of jail, I ran to drug court. I remembered that I had a lifelong membership at drug court. The drug court staff let me be angry, go through the grieving process. The drug court staff, as well as the clients, let me cry and gave me a shoulder to lean on. I don't think I would have made it without drug court, another drug court miracle. Since I was at the treatment center every day, the program manager asked me if I would be a volunteer. I was so grateful to have a reason to get up in the morning. I volunteered for 9 months. I learned how to do the secretary's job. So when she graduated from Cal Poly, I was asked if I wanted to take over her job. Needless to say, I jumped at the opportunity. I have now been an employee of Mental Health Systems, Inc. for 2 years and 5 months. If I wasn't able to come to the drug court program 5 days a week, I don't know where I would have ended up. One thing I do know for sure is that God must have a plan for me, because I'm alive and my husband is not. Today, May 3rd, would have been his 46th birthday.
Thank you, Violet. And for someone that has known you for 35 years, I'm very, very proud of you.
Good morning. I'm Tina Leibscher from the Probation Department.
Pull the microphone up, please.
On behalf of Mental Health Systems and our Drug Court alumni, we designed bumper stickers and T-shirts, and we'd like to present them to the board this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jerry checking. He checked the size for us.
I want to make sure I didn't get Shirley's.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Do
you want to get one? Okay, the whole
Judge,
family.
Can you come
then?
Forward for your whole family for a picture,
and
please?
Cliff, you're next.
Jeff's got the camera. Jerry, can you take a picture?
It's been a long time.
Jerry Shea, can you take this picture?
Shirley's going to present these five. They're not here today.
If all of those who are leaving could leave quietly so we could continue with our presentation calendar. If Cliff Howe would please come to the microphone. Okay, we're going to do Cliff Howe's presentation at this time, so please leave quietly. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam
Mr.
Chair. I have to apologize. I should have Cliff Smith come read this because the two of them become brothers in the last year or so. And I kind of wanted to call this the Unsung Hero Award, predominantly because of the last number of years that Cliff's been involved in with Public Works. He spent much time trying to resolve a lot of our problems, which happens to be with the roads. But let me read the resolution, and I'm sure there's a few guys out there from Public Works that have something they want to say about you. This is a resolution commending Cliff Howe for his retirement of 36 years of service with Public Works. Cliff decided to retire after 36 years of service. Cliff became a permanent employee in July of 31st of 1971 and has served 3.5 decades with the county. Interestingly enough, his career, he's worked for Public Works Department in Construction Design and Road Maintenance Division. Cliff's outstanding work in San Luis Obispo County has resulted in increased productivity, safe, and well-maintained road system. Although I have a few still that will argue with you on that, I know. Cliff has passed his valuable knowledge and skills on to his employees, and the department and the county will greatly miss his dedication and service. He'll probably miss the phone calls from us, but
always.
Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Board of Supervisors that Cliff Howe is hereby commended for his 36 years of meritorious and conscientious service to the people of San Luis Obispo County. And I would like to double that. So, Cliff. Yeah. Yeah, Cliff, while you're going back there, there's a foursome I see all the time while playing golf from Oak Shores, and they're still about Lynch Canyon Road. So
They're running out of Volkswagens, they say.
No, I have a question of Cliff before he starts. Is there any street or road in this county that you don't know the name of and where it is?
I'm sure there are, but I
haven't figured that
out. I know the majority of them. Driven most of them at least a few times, so... as far as Lynch Canyon, yeah, we're working in the area.
Yeah. So I keep telling them.
It's interesting leaving, and I kind of feel like the upstart coming after Judge Mooney. You know, he's been here a lot longer than I have, and he's a hard act to follow. But I've really enjoyed my work with the county, worked with a lot of interesting people, a lot of people I call friends, and, yes, with Cliff Smith a lot lately on North County roads. So I've got a lot of plans for the future. I'm really going to miss everybody, but not that much. I'm really looking forward to it. So I appreciate everything you've done. That said, thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. King.
Thank you, Chairperson Bianchi, members of the board. I'm Noel King, Public Works Director. Cliff's not going to be around much longer, so I figured it was time to come clean today. While he's been with the county for 36 years, he's been the road maintenance superintendent for about five. And prior to having the road maintenance job, he used to have a beard, and his hair used to be a little redder than it is today. And we have another guy in our department named Mark Sullivan who has red hair and a beard. And Supervisor Ovett used to have a habit of mixing the two up. And he'd see Cliff, and he'd start talking to him about Mark's business and vice versa. And for quite a while, those guys just played the game. They didn't want to... You don't tell a supervisor he's wrong, and they learn that quickly. And so we told Cliff that when he got promoted to the road maintenance superintendent position that he was going to be a little more high profile, so the beard had to go so we could know who was who. And so he shaved his beard, he got promoted, and everybody knows who Cliff was now. Once he shaved his beard and did get promoted to the road maintenance superintendent position, he became responsible for the maintenance of over 1,300 miles of road, 200 bridges, and somewhere over 4,000 culverts, which is actually a lot of things to keep track of. And as the chairperson said, Cliff knows just about every road in the county. In his quiet, low-key manner, he's done a fine job of leading our road maintenance efforts in spite of a lot of adversity. Things like in the past few years, having a 10% reduction in our road crew sizes, having significant earthquake damage, extensive rains in the last year, reduced pavement management and state funding for maintenance, and increased environmental documentation, making projects that used to be fairly routine often complex now and time delayed. A lot of people, when they have those types of adversity, kind of use them as excuses to complain about things and not work very well, but other people just consider it part of the job and figure out ways to get things done. And that's how I think of Cliff. Whatever adversity has come up, he's kind of rolled with it and just figured out how to go about getting our work done. He's also, as Supervisor Ovett said, been a primary contact person for board members over the last several years. He's also a primary contact person for the public. He gets it really from both ends, and I have a file folder full of letters of appreciation for Cliff's crew and for Cliff personally on several items, some from your board members, many from the public. His job is often has been a delicate one where he had to represent the interest of his road crews when he's talking to management, and at the same time he had to make sure that the road crews understood what management's approach was on things and got them to do things that way. So it was a very fine line he walked, and I think he did it very well. He'll be greatly missed by the department, but we're happy to see him have the opportunity to retire now. He's got 36 years in, which seems like a long time, but he's still relatively young, and I know he and Jana have plenty of things they'd like to do, and I'm glad he has a chance to do them now. So congratulations, Cliff, and thanks for your fine work for the county. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you very, very much, Cliff. When it always amazes me. You know, the road I live on has so many problems. It's just amazing. And, you know, I come down in the morning and I think, oh, maybe it's an act of God and I won't be able to get out. And doggone, they've cleaned the road every time. So thank you very much. With that, we will move on to Supervisor Ashadjian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This I would like to ask Dr. Bravo to come forward, please, and also with Dr. Bravo, who happened to be the chair of the Children's Health Initiative. With him is Kenna, who's the executive director. We also have Dr. Thomas in the audience, who's a member of the board. This resolution declaring May 1st through 8, 2005, has covered the uninsured week in San Luis Obispo County. Whereas 45 million Americans, equal to the combined population of 24 states, do not have health care coverage, 6.5 million of those individuals are Californians. And whereas 8 out of 10 people who are uninsured are in working families. And whereas there are more than 1 million children in California without health coverage. And whereas uninsured Americans live sicker and die younger than those who are covered and suffer needlessly because they go without the health care they need. And whereas the price of health care continues to rise and fewer individuals and families can afford to pay for coverage, and fewer businesses are able to provide coverage for their employees. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize the urgency of seeking solutions to one of America's greatest problems, and hereby declare their support for Cover the Uninsured Week, May 1st through the 8th, year 2005. Would you please come forward and accept this resolution?
Get in the center here, and Vicky's going to take a picture of us while we're here. Thank you. And want to say we're Dr. Bravo, right?
It gives me great pleasure to and honor to receive this, and also I'd like to make a presentation to the Board of Supervisors. In my years here as a pediatrician, I've seen the issues that evolve when people don't have access to health coverage and the often heartbreaking decisions that they have to make when they have to choose between accessing care and other basic needs. As the president of the Children's Health Initiative, I'd like to present this token and plaque to the Board of Supervisors for their affirmation and their support in and helping the Children's Health Initiative get off the ground here in San Luis Obispo County. And we're all working together to make sure that San Luis Obispo County's children have access to quality health care. And again, I want to thank the Board of Supervisors for the leadership in making this happen.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Thank you very much. On behalf of the board, I accept it.
Thank you.
Would Dr. Thomas care to say a word, or can I? Following Dr. Bravo.
Thank you.
Sure you don't.
I'd just like to tell the Board of Supervisors thank you so much for your support, and we appreciate your continued support.
May we have your name for the record?
Oh, yes, it's Kenna Burke, the Executive Director of the Children's Health Initiative. Thank you again.
Thank you.
And Greg Thomas, Health Officer, Director of Public Health. I want to thank you. I want to acknowledge the work of Kenna, Dr. Bravo, Joel Dieringer, Kathy Long, as the officers of the Children's Health Initiative, really a dream that started a few years that, you know, it's been said that all politics is local, all action. If you want to resolve problems, their efforts and our efforts together to ensure all kids is making a difference, and we're set to roll July 1st. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you three very, very much. With that, concludes
Madam Chair, could I add one thing to Dr. Bravo?
Pardon?
I was just going to say to Dr. Bravo that it's been a pleasure to work with you, and in my previous career in law enforcement, this is one person that when it came to a child, never said no to help us in any way he could. And I salute you for that, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
With that concludes our presentation calendar. So now is the time for members of the public to you have 3 minutes to speak on any item that is not on the agenda for the day. And with that, my first request to speak form is Julie Rodewald.
Good morning, Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. Did you want to announce who's next?
Yeah, thank
okay.
you. The look on my face.
I could.
Mark Phillips is next, and then followed by Eric Green.
I just wanted to remind voters out in Los Osos Community Services District, today is Election Day. They have until 8 o'clock tonight to turn in their ballots and results on the election for Measure A, which is a special tax election, will be available on our website after 8 o'clock, and that's sloclerkrecorder.org. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mark Phillips, followed by Eric Greeney.
Hi, my name is Mark Phillips. I reside in Atascadero, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. Again, I want to mention the effort that myself and some of the other members of SLOGE Free are making to present to you a resolution in support of Dennis Kucinich's bill, H.R. 2916, I believe it is. I gave you a copy of it last time I spoke. And this bill would require labeling of all genetically engineered food. We make this request because I was involved in the Measure Q campaign quite a bit, and I did a lot of canvassing. I went and talked to a lot of people. And while a lot of people did not support the measure, a lot of people did, but nobody that I spoke to was against labeling, not one person. And even the heavyweights for the No on Q campaign are on record as supporting labeling. They, as I do, think it's a important right that we should have to know what we're eating and to choose to eat genetically engineered food or not. So this bill that Dennis Kucinich is proposing would do that. Again, I gave you a copy of it that you could look over. Last time I was here, I also mentioned that anybody who would like to comment on this effort to present this resolution to you for approval could contact SLOGEFree.org and provide their comments, and we'll consider them when we make this resolution. So I repeat that offer now to anybody who would like to take advantage of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I was going to comment that on our county website, if you go down to Ag Commissioner and click on the report from the committee that worked on the GE problem, you will find the county's official statement on labeling. Thank you. With that, Eric?
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and certainly going the next step to make sure that we are on top of current legislation is a needed step when appropriate. And so whenever we have a legislative platform or positions, we should then instruct either correspondents or our lobbyist or both to make sure that we're truly out there on the issues where we need to be. So I fully endorse the issue that the last speaker brought up. The other issue I want to discuss is the pending move of the supervisor's offices to the new building. So far I've only seen the first floor, and it's going to be very nice to have a center aisle in the supervisor's chambers. There are a couple of things I would like to make sure happen from the standpoint of public information. One is that there is no gap in the ability of the public to know exactly where to go to get the information we now get in room 370. In other words, I would hope that a few days before the move, there will start to be posting in room 370 as to the date of the move and the location to go, and that all of the information will be available as quickly as possible in the new location. The other thing I would ask for is that there be a designated place in the supervisor's chambers for an actual copy of the full agenda so that people during the hearing can reference it. Most city councils I know do this, and now the Planning Commission is doing it with their agenda. So far, they just set it right over there. You don't necessarily need a fancy place, but just a place where everyone knows that it's there and that it starts being part of the process. Because when someone comes in and for another item and then finds out another item grabs their interest and they haven't looked into it, it's disconcerting for them to have to actually leave the hearing and miss what's going on in order to come up to speed on that item. So it's just an important public service to have the public have access to just what it is you're talking about while they're hearing you talk about it. So please do think of that, and I will welcome seeing you in the new place with the center aisle and less foot mashing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Eric. And that's an excellent suggestion to have the full copy of the agenda available. Mr. Edge, I was going to call on you anyway.
There you go. Actually, a couple of items in response to Eric's. We, coincidentally, Cecilia and I had been discussing that very issue, and what we're anticipating is perhaps setting something up outside the new board chamber with a complete copy of the agenda and agenda transmittals included in it, perhaps in the format of the on a chain like the telephone directories in some of the public telephone booths, if there are any public telephone booths left in this country at this point. I'm not sure there are. So that one is, I think Eric will be happy to see that happen. And then in reference to the other question, we will make the exchange as public from room 370 to the new building as public as possible. We will put up notices. The plan right now, as your board is aware, is that we're moving over the weekend of the 14th and 15th. We will probably close the office. We haven't settled yet, but we anticipate closing the office a little early on Friday the 13th to start the move, and we should be up and operating on the 16th, Monday the 16th, in the new building. We have, your board is planning, as you know, we're going to cancel the meeting of the 17th to facilitate the move, and right now the plan is that the first board meeting in the new chamber will be the meeting of June the 7th. So we'll have, we'll move on that weekend of the 14th and 15th. We will not have a meeting on the 17th. We will have the meeting of the 24th in this chamber. The 31st is a fifth Tuesday and a dark day. And then we will have the first meeting of June. June the 7th should be in the new chamber. All being well.
Thank you very much. And I have had many people ask me if we plan to begin this move on Friday the 13th. And I said, no. We didn't plan it that way. It just happened. With that, I will close the public comment period, and we will go to the consent agenda. I have one request to speak for. Eric.
Hello again. I am Eric Greening on items B12 and B17. B12 is a final map on 278 lots in the Woodlands Project near Nipomo. This is supposedly routine since the applicants have satisfied all the conditions of approval set in a public hearing. But both the scale and location of this approval call for it not to escape notice. One pertinent question is the timing of sale and development of these lots. A negative declaration has just been posted on this year's growth management amendment, which assumes a continued 2.3% growth rate for Nipomo. However, I understand that next week your board will be grappling with the question of whether to declare a level of severity 3 for water supply in the Nipomo area. I also recall that Woodlands got some sort of exemption from the constraints of the growth management ordinance. Is all of this setting up a perfect storm of contradictions? Other questions. In the wake of Save the Mesas lawsuit, how will public facilities and Quimby fees collected on these lots be spent? And the circulation fees to be collected from these lots as they develop, exactly what increment of future improvements will they pay for? Recording this map is probably inevitable. The applicant has satisfied the conditions. But in the big picture, are we sinking deeper into a hole we have yet to find a way out of? On a happier note, your applications on B-17 for transportation enhancement grants all look worthy. Given the number of applications coming from the cities and the amount to be distributed, nothing is guaranteed at this point, but if the county receives funding for even one of these projects, it will be a great public benefit. I would like to thank the staff to rising to the challenge of an extremely tight timeline to get these applications ready and out. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Eric. I have no other requests to speak forms on the consent agenda, so I will bring it back. Mr. Ovett, do you have any comments?
None, Madam Chair.
Mr. Patterson.
Comment on B-17.
Mr. Lenthal.
No, ma'am.
None?
No.
Mr. Shadjan.
None, thank you.
And I have want to pull B-12 for a separate motion. Your comments on B-17.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, would just like to thank the Planning and Public Works staff for putting those grant proposals together on very short notice. One of them is for streetscape in Santa Margarita, something the community has been working on for years, and we're hoping for success.
Okay, may we have a motion on all the
move
items
approval.
Except B-17
second.
Or B-12? A second?
Second.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Shadjan?
Aye.
Mr. Ovin?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Move for approval of B-12.
Second.
Okay. May we have a roll call, please?
Who seconded that? I'm sorry. Thank you. Mr. Ovin?
Aye.
Mr. Shadjan?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
No. I haven't voted yes on the Woodlands in 10 years. I'm not going to start now. With that, that's the consent agenda. We will move on to the first item. Let me get my page turned here. Item C1.
Item C1 is a hearing to consider proposed amendments to the San Luis Obispo County Land Use Ordinance G020002L, South Atascadero Secondary Dwelling Amendment. Staff is recommending this item be continued to June 14.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Staff is recommending this item be continued. The Planning Commission just took action last Thursday, and so the continuance will allow staff to prepare to transmit their record to your board for action.
Okay. Do we? Does this require a motion? Or
yes, it does. This okay. is a noticed hearing. So.
So moved.
Second.
Well, first I should ask if there's anyone here to address the board on this item. Seeing no one, we'll bring it back. Okay, we already have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Okay, with that, thank you, Cammy. Item C2.
Item C2 is a hearing to consider the submittal of a resolution to surplus and sell county-owned real property in the unincorporated area of Cayucas to a qualified land conservancy and authorize the board to open sealed bids
okay.
and conduct an auction. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Thank you very much. May we have a staff report, please?
Okay. That was me with the big bang.
Did your finger survive?
We just wanted to wake us up, Karen.
Let me see. Turning on the power. I need just a moment to get the...
Can I ask, there was one gentleman, and I saw him here earlier, that was involved in this thing, and Mr. Patterson, I think it is, or...
Parsons.
He's in the back of the room, I think.
He was, but he's not. And I seen him walking around out there, and I don't know if he's left or... He knows this is on right now.
J. Parsons. Okay, we do have a couple of displays that we want to be able to show you guys.
Hold that microphone up.
Okay.
Good morning, Supervisor Bianchi, members of the board. My name is Karen Madalena. I'm the County Real Property Manager with the Department of General Services. On March 22nd, your board approved a resolution setting today's date and time to conduct an auction for the surplus and sale of 145 county-owned real parcels located in the Cayucas Hillside subdivisions, specifically Morrow Strand and Morrow Rock View. The parcels range in size from 1,300 square feet to 2,500 square feet, and some of the parcels do contain multiple lots. Use of these properties will be restricted to open space, and only bids submitted from nonprofit organizations whose mission is land conservancy with a history of successful land management will be considered. This issue is presented to you by the Department of General Services because our department holds title to these properties. However, this is mostly a land planning issue, and I anticipate that John Ufrat and Carrie Brown will be here to answer any questions related to planning. Picture one, as you can see, these parcels were generally acquired by the county through property tax default, although some were donated. In accordance with the board's policy dated July 12, 1988, the Department of General Services has acquired tax-defaulted properties located in paper subdivisions such as Morrow Strand Subdivision and Morrow Rock View Subdivision. Both of these subdivisions were originally subdivided in the 1920s prior to amendment of the Subdivision Map Act. These properties are located outside of the urban reserve line in an area that's designated as geologically unstable. Most of these properties are difficult to locate because the roads are not clearly marked, nor are the properties. There are no utilities in the subdivision. During the 1980 land use plan update, the zoning of these properties was changed from residential to rural lands, requiring a minimum of 1 acre lot size to build a residence. Based on the average lot sizes in these two subdivisions, approximately 20 contiguous lots would be required in order to build. Owners have, in some cases, attempted to accrue an acre, but there are no homes yet built in either of the subdivisions. Some of the landowners in these subdivisions will not be able to accrue a 1 acre buildable site if they are unable to purchase some of these county lots listed in the surplus and sale. When owners of the properties in these subdivisions inquire about the possibility of developing their property, county planning informs them of the requirement of a minimum 1 acre lot size and the substantial obstacles that are inherent in trying to build a road and other improvements in a geologic study area. Utilities would also be difficult to provide. The board policy of acquiring these properties following tax default has removed many parcels that may have been purchased by unsuspecting consumers who may not have realized the many challenges to development. On the screen, you have that, okay. On the screen, you will see the general location of one of the subdivisions, Morrow Rock View, which is located in the hills east of Highway 1 near Cayucas Drive exit. As you can see, these properties outlined in white are scattered throughout the subdivision. The roads are privately owned and are basically Jeep trails that have never been accepted by the county for maintenance. The public is not entitled access to the roads in either of these subdivisions. The second picture shows Morrow Strand Subdivision. This area is located south of Old Creek Road, east of Highway 1, and above existing homes. Not all the lots owned by the county in this subdivision are included in this sale. County Public Works has identified 33 of these lots at the lower elevations that may fit the location requirements for future water project. And these lots are not currently under consideration as surplus.
Per Resolution 20572, the Board of Supervisors has approved the intention to surplus and sell these parcels by auction on today's date to a nonprofit organization with a mission of land conservancy and a history of successful land management. Per government code, public notice of this sale has been published in the newspaper. A two-thirds vote of the board is required to approve this sale. These properties will be transferred with perpetual deed restrictions, limiting the use of the property to open space. The draft restrictions are fully detailed in the board letter. Restricted activities include grading and construction of any building, structure, billboard, or road, except as necessary for the authorized use of the property or for educational or scientific purposes. Although the draft of the deed restrictions did not itemize the types of allowed passive recreation, we are proposing a change. The deed restrictions would state that passive recreation would include but not be limited to hiking, hang gliding, and paragliding. Motor vehicles are not allowed on the property except for authorized purposes. In the event of a violation of the open space restrictions or dissolution of land conservancy, the ownership of the properties will transfer to another land conservancy approved by the Board of Supervisors. If another land conservancy cannot be arranged, title would revert to the county. Based on the current market that has been established for these properties, the county assessor's office has appraised them for a total of $248,000, including the open space deed restriction. The current market, however, is unrealistic as to the development potential of these properties and does not take into account the public benefit sought by the Board of Supervisors. The minimum acceptable bid, therefore, has been established at $1. This approach acknowledges that the intention of the board in this transaction is to reduce county's exposure to liability for this real property, as well as to clearly indicate to the public the board's intention to protect the Highway 1 Cayucos Critical View Shed. The winning bidder must pay a non-refundable $825 surplus and sale fee immediately after this hearing. The buyer must also elect, the buyer may also elect to open escrow, obtain title insurance, conduct inspections of the property at the buyer's sole cost, and escrow shall close within 90 days. This concludes the staff presentation on this property.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of staff at this time? And that would include planning staff by board members.
Yes.
Mr. Ovitt.
Thank you. I met with a Mr. Parsons here last week, and I told him that I would ask these questions.
Well, he's here.
I know he is.
Oh, okay.
But I also want to ask these before we get into it. And reading different things in here, you say by resolution that private property owners were not allowed to bid on this, that only the land conservancies?
Not on the county-owned properties, that's correct. In the RFP that we distributed, it was the qualifications had to be for a nonprofit land conservancy type.
The other thing in planning would probably, if they want to come to the microphone on this thing, is there... Who is here from planning is going to talk? John?
Mr. Euphrat.
Do you want to explain or do you want to bring up the fact where we're at with the sterile plan and was there an overlay laid on this about development on this particular area within the Estrella Estero Bay plan?
John Euphrat, planning staff. Your board actually approved the policies that deal with this property that would encourage it to move into either public ownership or to pursue strategies with nonprofit conservation organizations in November 2004, and then we submitted it shortly thereafter to the California Coastal Commission, and it's part of the Estero Area Plan update that includes the communities of Los Osos and Cayucos, and so as a result of that, they have not taken any action yet. It's still pending at their level.
Okay. Then let me ask one other question while you're there. I got one more question after that.
Okay, go ahead.
That's fine. There is also then the ability for these lots to merge into 1 acre and actually could be buildable lots. And there are some areas I'm referring to on top that could be buildable lots that are not on the side hills over 30%.
Well, I mean, there is more rural property. It's all zoned rural lands. None of it's zoned residential. I don't think any of the antiquated subdivision areas, there any owners own an acre, which is what's necessary to have a well and a septic system.
Our own rules allow merger
absolutely
to 1 acre minimum size for a buildable lot.
That's correct. If a property owner owned enough to make an acre of contiguous lots.
My question is that on top, where it's relatively flatter than on the side hills, there may be areas up in there that could meet the 1 acre if they merged and could have buildable lots. With all the other restrictions to get there, I understand. I'm not weighing those.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of restrictions. I believe at the top you're getting outside of the antiquated subdivisions, but I'm not entirely sure. That's part of the problem. It's not been surveyed out there recently.
Well, some of these lots are in that area up in there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's almost all geologically unstable, which is...
Okay, this is a comment. It's not... Well, actually, I could form it in a question.
Sure.
John, would you like to explain the... of fact that in the safety element, this area is in a extremely highly unstable geologic area. And it's not whether there are properties that are flat up on top, it's whether you can get to them and you can get your infrastructure to the lots and have it be in the same place, you know, this year as it was last year.
And I understand that there's problems getting roads up.
Absolutely. We've had our county geologist has reviewed it and found it to be very, very challenging, to say the least, to be able to create the roads and actually build a home that would be stable, be a daunting task.
And also to keep your well or your septic tank in some usable...
working order.
Yeah. And then the last question that... Is there an ability for the Conservancy to trade lots at a later time period that would allow merger for private property owners in areas that could be built?
That is not a part of our, no, that would not be possible. They're restricted from doing that.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, I see no other lights, so with that I will open it to the public. Jay Parsons, followed by Roger Lyon.
We have better try another one.
Well, she's waiting for that to come up. Mr. Parsons, are you acquainted with our light system here? The green light, you have 2 minutes. You'll see it when it comes on. You have 2 minutes, and then when the yellow light goes on, you have 1 minute more. And when the red light goes on, you conclude your statements. So you have 3 full minutes. And when the red light goes on, if you don't look up, I'll remind you.
The best.
And your time is not running at this point.
Thank you. Well, Vicki suggested that I bring just a photocopy because apparently the transparencies don't show up very well, do they?
There's one the staff. There's one the staff presented to us.
Yeah, try it, please.
Actually, one of the staff gave it a lot better presentation.
Jay, have you seen this color one the staff has? Will this help you?
I'm sorry, Jay.
Will this help you, this color photo that staff handed to us?
That's a better representation. That one will show up better.
For the radio public, we're trying to get our pictures clear on the overhead.
Well, I guess that's the best we're going to do. Good morning. I'm Jay Parsons. First, thank you all very much for meeting with me. I appreciate your time. Obviously, you all know that I'm here to speak against this. I own several properties up there, and I've been a longtime resident of San Luis Obispo County. My hope is that you will postpone or stop this sale. I think that the downstream ramifications of this decision are great, and it would be my hope that you would at least think through that. In 1927, when the board approved this subdivision, obviously they did not adequately consider the future of some of the problems that they have created that we're now dealing with. And I think that since there's now 400 or 500 owners up there that are in the same situation as I am, that as the board, you still control what can happen to these lots, and if they're deeded out to others, you will no longer be able to control what happens. As prices continue to increase in that area, I think the pressure is only going to become greater upon you and the county to deal with this issue. My hope is that you will recognize there is a problem here that we need to deal with. This is a much bigger picture than just deeding out a few lots for a negligible amount of money. There's really no benefit to the county here financially, and there's really no liability offset to the county deeding these over. So my hope is that you will consider not deeding them over without a little bit more study on this. It seems to me the only real qualified bidder is the Cayucos Land Conservancy. They appear to have an ownership history of 2 years, and I'm unclear who benefits by them owning the properties other than the 2,900 people that live in Cayucos now. There's certainly been some issues about geologic, what I consider to be misinformation, and I know that Madam Chairman and I disagree on that issue, but there's a lot of those lots up in that subdivision that are perfectly flat. They're perfectly buildable. But when you generally lump them together as a geologic nightmare, well, I can't deal with misinformation. I would suggest that, you know, everybody drive out there for themselves, take the map, and look at some of those lots that are flat and perfectly buildable. And I'm going to acknowledge that there's a number of those lots that should never have been subdivided that are on 30-40% slopes, and practically speaking, those lots will never be buildable. But we need to deal with this whole issue as a big picture rather than just kicking these under the carpet and picking them up as people die off. That's not fair to the people that die off and their heirs, and it's not fair to us that still are alive and own them and pay taxes. Over the 15 years that I've owned these properties, I've paid over $20,000 in property taxes, and I would hope that you would represent me a little bit as to what my future is. It would be nice to have some direction. If the board's position is that we're going to just green space all of those, well, I don't have an issue with that, but I think that we need to pay somebody some money and take them. If the position is that we're really going to allow people to build, and by consolidating one-acre parcels, it's conceivable over who knows how many years that possibly somebody could build a few houses up there. But if you, in looking at this map that I have up, that I tried to create, and I apologize, it's not good. There's a number of lots that the county owns presently, and if you deed these over to the Land Conservancy, that will preclude the ability for any of the private owners to ever consolidate one-acre parcels. So basically, you have stopped everybody, all 200, 300, 400 people, I don't know how many owners, from ever doing anything. So if that's the case, what then do we do? I guess I've pretty well summed that up. What then do we do?
And your red light is on. I was listening to what you had to say and wasn't paying attention to the lights.
Well, I wasn't either, and thank you for allowing me to run a minute over time.
Thank you. Roger.
Thank you. My name is Roger Lyam. I'm a board member with the Cayucos Land Conservancy, and I appreciate the hard work that the staff has put forth in bringing this item to you, and I also appreciate Supervisor Bianchi's support for this. I think this is a win-win situation. The Cayucos Land Conservancy was formed over 5 years ago. Our goal is to establish a green belt around the community of Cayucos. We have a track record. We've held the conservation easement on the Estero properties, 4 miles of Coastal Terrace above Cayucas now for over 5 years very successfully. We own 15 parcels which we have either been donated or purchased in the Hillside subdivisions. So I think we do have a good track record. We have several other projects ongoing with property surrounding Cayucas to fulfill the goal of a green belt. I think it's a win-win for the county as well. As Mr. Ufrat indicated, you have a policy that you've adopted as far as either having public ownership or private nonprofits help in establishing open space around the community. And I think what you're going forward with or considering today is a positive step in that direction. With that, we would support that. We have submitted a bid. We would encourage you to go forward today, and we hope that we're the successful bidder. If you have any questions, I'd be glad
to address. Mr. Shadjian has a question.
Mr. Lyons, you mentioned you have purchased properties in the past. How active are you on the market by communicating with those that might have a property for sale? And who is there an appraised value that you go about?
We actually went and sent a mailer out to the property owners in the Hillside lots, and we did our research as far as market, and we made an offer. We had a limited amount of funds at the time. We hope to get more funding and make offers, but we did purchase, I think it was about 10 of the lots. From willing sellers. They are also able, if the market value is higher than that, there are tax benefits available to property owners that make donations or a bargain sale of lots.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jeff Strickland, followed by Marjorie Huggins.
My name is Jeff Strickland. I live at 800 Harmony Way, Morro Bay. I am so upset that I can't even speak, so I'm sorry about that. I didn't find out about this till last week. Talking about misinformation, it's just so bizarre. I've been a property owner for 10 years, and I do have a legal billable property. It is more than an acre. It's at the top, and it's out of the California Coastal Commission. I have been given so much misinformation every time I go to the county. That it's ridiculous. We are a nonprofit organization. We are capable of bidding on this, and we've tried to bid, and we never get a chance. So I'm going to just apologize and give you some facts, and then I'm going to excuse myself.
If you could pull the microphone down.
My parcel, I have 3 parcels. I've been trying for 10 years to buy an acre so that I could, when I found out about the 96 thing. Anyway, parcel number 642325008. And 12, I've been trying to bid on with a legal nonprofit organization that does have a history, not the history of the Cayucas Homeowners Association that I didn't even know until last week is called conservation or whatever. So I just apologize for not being prepared, and I that's all I can say.
What is your nonprofit organization?
Our Kids Future Foundation, also known as the Unify Foundation.
You are a local organization?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for your comments. Marjorie Huggins, followed by Bruce Gibson.
Yeah, I was just going to request...
You have to give your name again for the record,
Marjorie
please.
Marjorie Huggins.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not used to her. I've never been to one of these,
no,
so if I do anything wrong.
Sorry. That's fine.
My only input is to say I've been close to the sustainability community. And when you suggest that there's no way of putting sewers in that area... The future of sustainable sewers is going to be different than what we have presently today. And as far as electricity or lighting, we have solar. So I would not take these properties and put them in a place where maybe some sustainability situation could make these a possibility for somebody.
Thank you for your comments.
You're welcome.
And Bruce Gibson, that's the last request to speak form that I have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bruce Gibson, also of the board of the Cayucas Land Conservancy. And as Roger said, I believe that moving forward today with the conveyance of these parcels to a qualified land trust is a definite step in the right direction, a definite step forward. The matter of these hillside subdivisions has been a considerable vexation for both the community and the landowners, and we know that. I believe that a land trust is as good a solution as or good a, as good an approach as we can find to trying to move forward on this. A friend of mine calls it the third way. There's the free market, there's the purely regulatory approach, and then there's the way land trusts try to approach things. With the acquisition of these county lots, I believe that a land conservancy will have a critical mass that will allow it to go forward to seek some serious funding to go out in the free market, try to offer value to landowners to try to also achieve the policies of your board to create open space and to retire the development potential, particularly of parcels that probably shouldn't have been subdivided where they were so many years ago. So we think this is a very positive step over a very long-term period. We believe Land Conservancy can move forward to give value, particularly through our tax-exempt status, and that hopefully over the course of time we can resolve this and provide a significant public benefit. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I have one more request to speak for him that just came in. Giselle Naylor, I believe it is.
Hi, my name is Giselle Naylor. I'm a property owner. I own lots in Cambria, and I own my home in Oceano. This board took an action which resulted in my losing a buildable lot and space because the county essentially facilitated the sale of private land to a developer. And I feel that what happened in my particular situation is relevant on your policies now on this item as far as how you decide to use the merger process to take private land. What I believe is happening as relates to this particular item, and I may be wrong, but I encourage anybody with legal knowledge to do the research on this. My understanding is before the Subdivision Map Act was created, the general rule of law was that if a property owner owned land that had been essentially abandoned by the county, wasn't used by the county, was never offered to the county or accepted for dedication, that land, that no man's land, if you will, reverts back to private acreage and attaches as a matter of statutory law to the lots which are adjacent and contiguous to them. I don't know the specific easements which may or may not exist on the lots which you're putting up for bid, but I do think that denying private property owners the ability to bid on those lots or even assert a claim that those lots were private acreage and they had a title interest in it as far back as the 20s is wrong. What's happening here is kind of a change in the merger process and the merger laws, which allow the county to essentially claim private property as if it were their own. To me, that's a presumption. And whenever this land supposedly reverted from residential to rural property, my question is, were the property owners notified that their title interests would be negatively affected by this zoning change? My further question is, law, the statutes usually require that when property is merged or when they give up property they have a title interest in, their signature of approval has to appear on the paperwork consisting of the merger. So I'm against having this take place, not because I'm against preservation of open space, but why should a corporation such as the Land Conservancy have greater rights than private property owners that have been paying taxes and may have a title interest in the land? Why should they be given greater privilege as far as ownership of this property is concerned.
Your time is up, Ms. Naylor.
Thank you.
Thank you. If there's anyone else here who wishes to speak, I wish you would bring your forms up now. Mr. Trout?
Hi, I'm Kevin Irett. I'd like to speak on this issue. And what that lady said was
excuse me, how do you pronounce your last name?
Irett.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
That's all right, Shirley. What that lady was asserting is essentially correct. If the parcels are merged and bought by one large organization, the roads within the subdivision still remain, in use, and the abutting property owners own fee title to the middle of the roads, subject to the rights of the other owners in the subdivision to use those roads. So if the lots were merged, there would be nothing, I don't think, to stop anybody from asserting their private rights to use the roads that own lots in that subdivision, if that's the point the county's trying to make by merging the lots. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Now, that is the last request to speak form that I have. So with that, I will close it to the public. And at this time, before we continue with this hearing, I would like, unless you have an immediate...
No, I can wait.
Okay. I'd like to take a 10-minute break. We'll return at 10:30. Thank you.
He owns title to the lots up in this area, okay? We acquired these separate APNs through tax default and through private donation. Being a property owner in that area, we do have, every property owner in the area has an undivided interest in the easement, the road easement, which is the system. I mean, if you can find the roads. So, yes, technically, the property owners do have access to their lot should they decide to go sit on it and, have a picnic or something. The public does not have access to these lots because they are not the owners. The fact that the county is, I think people get confused sometimes when they think of county and they think of public, but in this case the county is one of the many property owners in the area. So in fact, each property owner does own to the middle of the street, so to speak, and each property owner has an undivided interest in the road system to get to their property.
So your ownership is not like a county park?
Correct.
It's fee ownership, just as
it's
any other...
It's fee ownership. That's correct.
Other property owner. Okay. Mr. Ashaja.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may ask a few questions and
okay.
Back to them one at a time. The gentleman who spoke of representing another nonprofit organization, were they given the same opportunity to be considered, or?
What we did is we did notice this, as we're required to do by code. We gave notice in a newspaper of general circulation. We are required to do that. I believe, was it three times, Vicki? Yeah. In this particular case, Code 6063, we're required to notice the community three times, which we did.
So that's our obligation, not necessarily to reach out to whoever might be surrounding the area.
It's hard to know, specifically, yeah.
The other question I want to ask, if we have properties that neighbors or have boundaries with an existing property that otherwise could have put an acre together. I know that building is going to be difficult, but that's for the planning to process. Are we absolutely not giving them that opportunity? Because I'm also thinking a follow-up question will be that the property we had it for sale in the, was it in Cayucas near the Highway 1? We put it out for a bid.
Right, that will be, are you talking about the lot that's coming next week?
Right. Well, we talked about it in the past, and nobody will bid on it.
Right.
Coming back again with some other ideas.
Right.
Why is that we didn't have the same approach to existing properties here? Because I'm thinking you can still give the large chunk to the conservancy, but if there's an opportunity to add a little bit on somebody's hope that someday, just with a miracle thing, you can build, are we not protecting their rights as well as the rights of having open space and more enjoyment and all of the above?
I hear what you're saying. The first part of your question is, I hope John's still here. Yeah, that's more of a planning. Planning needs to answer on that. Regarding the lot that we'll be bringing back next week, that is a buildable lot. It is residential, and it is conforming. So that's a difference.
John, would you like to respond to that?
Let me ask the question again, John, if that wasn't clear. Would you like me to, or you have?
Maybe if you just restate it one more time.
If I'm looking at a number of properties, that the more you go to the center, the less of a problem. The more you come closer to another person's property, that by just being able to bid could have given them that acre that they need just to be able to build someday. I know there are a lot of difficulties, and that's for the planning process to take care of it. What stops us from going that route to give that person the right to bid, just to have that 1 acre to make it possible to build someday? By doing this, are we taking that entire hope away, or are we killing something that otherwise could have been a win-win situation?
John Ufrat, planning staff. Anyone today that owns at least an acre would have the ability to apply for a land use permit to develop the property on those Cayucas hillsides. So today's action doesn't take away that. But
I recognize that, but if I'm right to be happen to be your neighbor, that if I was able to bid on this property, that would have made mine a 1 acre property.
Okay.
Then are we not helping them to help themselves, regardless that it will be very difficult to build?
I think in this case, if someone, and I don't think it's the case, but it could be. Let's just say someone owned, 0.9 of an acre or 0.95 of an acre, and if they bought a 25-foot lot that the county owns today, they would then have an acre. I don't think that the way it's being proposed, as in-fee ownership, that's not an option. So, in other words, it wouldn't help a contiguous property owner.
I believe the supervisor always asked the question. Let me ask it again for clarification. Why is it not an option? Because of ordinance we have in place? Resolution?
Well, I think it's because of, and general services may jump in, but I believe we're actually selling the property entirely to the conservancy, as opposed to if it were in the form of an easement. Maybe there would be additional options.
But those are not properties, correct?
I want to kind of jump in here, too. If somebody came to General Services today, as we hold title to these pieces of property, and requested for us to surplus and sell one of these lots to them, part of the procedure that we have to go through includes getting a general plan conformity report and a negative declaration from planning. We would not be able to accomplish that.
Unless it's 1 acre.
I think, if I might, Katja, to help out, the issue is, as I understand, the land use rules in that area state that there is no development unless it has 1 acre. And it can do 1 acre with its own septic and its own water.
That's correct.
Because my confusion was when I met with Ms. Parson, was I said, no, it's 2.5 acre minimum, you can't fit it. But this area has a standard that says that because they are existing lots. Merge them. And I think what Cacho's saying is, because we're not buying one specific piece of land, we're scattered out. There's all those that the county owns. That the individual I talked to, and I think that's what Cacho's referring to, is if another person wanted to walk in and buy adjacent property to get the 1 acre, he can meet his conformity. The issue he has is that he may not get access because of slopes on the road. There's other issues besides that, and that's their own gamble. That's not, we're not telling them they can or cannot do. But I think that's what Cacho was trying to add.
Thank you.
A person could buy it to get the 1 acre minimum.
Yeah. Actually, as long as I've been here, I've never had anybody come in for that kind of, it's never been such that we've had our last lot making the 1 acre.
Okay, Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned that many of these lots were purchased through tax defaults.
Correct.
Does anyone have an opportunity to bid on the lots at that time?
No, not before the county government.
Okay, so we...
That's a part of the Chapter 8 process.
Okay. And I do have a question for Mr. Ufrat also. What is the designation of this land as far as what's gone to the Coastal Commission from the Estero Area Plan? Is the ultimate desire to have this property? It was mentioned that it's part of a critical view shed for Highway 1, and also I know the residents of Cayucas are interested in trying to establish a green belt around that community. Has there been reference made to trying to achieve that goal through the Estero Area Plan?
John Ufrat, planning staff. Yes, it has, Supervisor Patterson. Madam Chair, your board ratified, actually the existing LCP that's already adopted and certified by the Coastal Commission has a policy in place that encourages this property to be preserved for conservation purposes, and that was underscored as part of the area plan update in November by your board, and then that's with the Coastal Commission, and everything we've heard so far would indicate their support of it as well. So we also have a letter, I think it's part of the packet, that from the Cayucas Advisory Council that supports the staff recommendation on this to establish the green belt.
Mr. Linthal.
Yes, I'm not sure who would be best for staff to answer this question, but it appears there's some confusing information about how one would go about, if they were a property owner, we heard from Mr. Parsons, we heard from somebody else here, to purchase or trade or get some type of credit or swapping with other property owners. And I believe you just said that the county probably wouldn't be selling anything, so that's not an option here. So would there be a benefit of having any future discussion for these future property owners to say, these are your only options as far as what you can do with your property? Because the only thing I heard before was that basically you can donate it or you can get some good tax credits and things like that. But what if, and I think Mr. O used the example of I needed one more parcel to make that acre, whether it was something that met with planning or had a whole bunch of review to go through, still wouldn't that be the property owner's right to say, I want to purchase that one additional piece of property to do that?
If the piece of property that you're referring to, is that a piece of property that's held by the county?
Yes.
And again, when we have requests for a surplus and sale of county property, see, we don't own a whole acre up there either.
Right.
And so when we have the request, the process that we have to go through involves getting a general plan conformity and an environmental determination. And that's where we, as property owner, too, I mean, we can't get a conformity from planning for that.
To sell the property?
To sell the property.
Okay, so
because it's too small.
I apologize. I just want to make sure I'm clear on here.
Okay.
So then from Mr. Parsons' standpoint or somebody else that has something out there, their only recourse would be to contact another property owner, hopefully something adjacent to that, make some type of offer to them or enter into some agreement to see if they're interested in selling their property, because that's the only way they're going to be able to get this 1 acre.
And I believe that happens quite frequently.
There are no other. Are you finished?
May I do a follow-up just to really
see
the issue?
I have a question for John when you're finished.
And I can wait if you want
me
to.
No, go ahead.
So if Parsons has a property adjacent to one of ours that we're willing to give it away, he won't be able to purchase it from us.
And that's correct.
And we'll sell it.
That's correct.
And that is because of? I know you said it once.
Because of the land planning issues that are in the area, that apply to the area.
And whose issues are these? I'm just trying to see where it came from.
Well, hello, John.
And basically, it's to repeat the policy that this board established last November.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's twofold. Madam Chair and members of the board, it's, you know, one, there is existing policy that strongly encourages a county to continue to acquire these properties. I'm going to read for a minute. Through tax defaults and retain them in public ownership, pursue strategies such as agreements with nonprofit conservation organizations to maintain the properties in open space use, or enable mergers with adjacent agricultural land that permanently retain the property in agricultural or open space use. So that's one reason. The second reason is that it's just basic health and safety issues that you have to keep in mind. These are lots that are either 25 by 70, which is 1,750 square feet, and so there's no possible way you can provide on-site services, whereas an acre is 43,560 square feet, so you need approximately 20 of these guys to make it developable, and so the county, even in and of itself, doesn't have that much. So it, you know, that's why we can't find them in conformity with the general plan. Normally, you know, the underlying general plan designation is a 20-acre minimum at best. In the rural lands land use designation, which is what the existing general plan designates as property.
Okay, does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet.
And I have one final comment that, based on the decision or the policy that our board established last November, that's when staff and I went ahead with this proposal, and it's, believe me, has required many pleasant meetings with General Services and also with Council and the Cayucas Land Conservancy to work out the presentation that we have today based on the policy that we did establish last November. And there are so many instances, we talk about the lack of a public benefit, but there are so many instances of houses in California that are built in one place, and then and they're usually built during a drought, and then the rains come and the house ends up someplace else, and oftentimes the people have the opportunity to get out and get away, and their lives aren't lost. That doesn't always happen. And this is not a change of subject, but we happen to live so far out we don't get cable, so we have satellite, and we frequently watch television news from Los Angeles. And I was, as the discussion was going on today, I was thinking about the Anaheim Hills this last winter, where house after house after house that was built on in an area such as this and was engineered, it was, you know, all the wonderfulness that goes along with permitting, didn't keep the houses in place. Down they went. And that's the public benefit, and also the private benefit that we're trying to establish is safety issues, and there is a public benefit. And I remember not long after I was elected, somebody who had lost their house in Los Angeles sued Los Angeles County for $7 million. So there is kind of a public benefit here. So with that, I'm going to Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We don't have to go as far as Los Angeles to see the kind of activity that Chairperson Bianchi described. We had that occur just west of Atascadero just a few years ago, where roads were built on very unstable slopes, and we not only lost the road and the water service beyond that, but also a building site downslope, and it cost the county and many others, including the homeowner, a lot of not only money but heartache as well. And I don't think it makes sense to try to develop that area. I guess the real disconnect for me and the problem I have is that there are people that own property there that are at a disadvantage. They've paid taxes on it for years, and now they can't recoup that investment. And I would like to see, perhaps in the future, a mechanism where, when, as that property is bought up to retire it, to preserve the view shed and the green belt around the community of Cayucas, we try to use a mechanism that really buys into the fair market value of the property, so folks that do own the property there aren't at a disadvantage that really has been imposed by government. I don't know how we go about that necessarily, but I would like to see that development rights on that property be retired in an economically fair way.
Okay, thank you for your comments. With that, we will proceed, and at this time I would ask the County Real Property Manager, Ms. Madalena.
Okay, thank you. At this time, I would like to present two sealed bids to be opened and announced. The bid form requires affirmation of the bidder's nonprofit status, mission of land conservancy, and history of successful land management. If there is any question as to the qualifications of the bidder, the board may ask for a temporary break in the proceedings so that Real Property Services may verify the status of the bidder.
Okay, with that, do you open the bids?
I got them.
You got them?
I got them.
And you open them?
I'll open them.
Would you please proceed?
Okay, your first bid is from Jay Parsons. Hold on.
The bid is in the amount of?
I believe it's a total 60 lots at $957 each for a total offer of $57,420.
$420?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you.
The next one is from the Cayucas Land Conservancy. And they have a bid of $1.
May I make
a
comment?
Yes, please.
I do understand that Mr. Parsons is a private property owner in the area, and although he has submitted a bid, I don't believe that it's a conforming bid.
No, I was going to suggest
that. Okay, thank you, Shirley.
So I will now open the floor to oral bids. The first oral bid must exceed the highest written bid by at least 5%, but subsequent bids have no limitations. Oral bidders from a recognized nonprofit will please raise their hand and be recognized by me. Introduce yourself, and then you must state. Okay, listen to me carefully, though. You must state your name, the name of the nonprofit that you represent, the confirmation that your nonprofit meets the required qualifications, and the amount of your bid. And it's the third item that's probably the most important, that confirmation that your organization meets the required qualifications. So, Mr. Strickland, you've raised your hand. Would you come to the microphone, please?
Madam Chair, while he's coming forward, may I ask you or the staff a question? Would his bid be above the $1? Because since Mr. Parsons is not acceptable?
That's correct. His bid would need to be at least $1.05.
So he can be $2.05 and outbid that? Okay, thank you.
If everything else is, if he qualifies in every other way.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Strickland, if you will give your name, the name of your nonprofit.
Yes, my name is Jeff Strickland. It's Our Kids Future Foundation, also known as the Unify Foundation.
And the confirmation that your organization meets the required qualifications. And if you would like to have Ms. Madalena repeat those qualifications.
That would be a nonprofit organization whose mission is land conservancy with a history of successful land management.
Yes, qualified. You want me to make the statement now?
Well, you have to. You can't just say that you're qualified. You have to present information.
Well, it's a very, very high-profile project. 34 acres on the ocean. I can name it if you choose for me to. And we have been 10 years involved in that project, and it only changed ownership January of this year, and that person is from out of area. And I'd have to get my attorney to say, yes, I think the answer is yes, but I won't know, and I could call my attorney and he could come.
I'm going to have to ask, I believe, counsel whether this is acceptable. My understanding is it has to be done now.
He's available, too, if you need for me to call him.
Good morning, Rita Neal, Deputy County Counsel. At this point, it should be up to the board to determine if any of the bidders are qualified or not. If you'd like a short continuance, you could do that. If you'd like to take a break, you could do that. Or if you'd like to make a determination at this point, you also have that option.
I think it's important that Mr. Strickland also tell us what the mission of his nonprofit is.
Do you have a mission statement?
Yes,
for
ma'am.
Your
mm-hmm.
And it is?
We are the byproduct of the original $500,000 funding in this county for drug and alcohol abuse. We are alternative activities for young adults. We have a very interesting background. Matter of fact, I came here this morning for this morning's session, and I didn't even know that this was going to happen until I just found out today. I had some information about it, but not enough to really speak. We've spent 10 years trying to get an investor with $2.5 million to invest in our other project. I can go on and on and tell you what history we've had since the funding was lost in this county and it had to go to the private sector. There has been a huge amount of investment by the private sector for this alternative activities for young adults.
I knew your name was familiar. So your main mission, however, is drug and alcohol rehabilitation.
We are alternative activities. I don't know anything about prevention, recovery. We are essentially a zero tolerance option. However, that is almost a joke because
you're there at the mouth of the Chorro Valley.
Pardon me?
Just outside of Morro Bay.
We have two projects. This one, which is a very small one, and then the decommissioned radar station.
In Cambria?
Cambria, right.
Okay. What I would like to do is take a continue this item until after our next item.
Okay.
And that would give us time to verify Mr. Strickland's organization's qualifications, if that would be acceptable to the board.
Yeah. Because I think the other thing, too, is that Mr. Strickland is not interested in all the lots. He's only interested in a certain number of the lots.
The ones that are outside of the coastal.
And that needs to be clarified how that's handled, because the Conservancy's bid is for all lots.
That's correct. It's conforming.
And I don't know that there's a restriction on the number of lots that somebody could have bid on if they qualified.
That was not part of the request for proposals. So,
mine is only outside of coastal, and I think I've got all the correct APNs, but I'm not sure of that yet. I need 10 more minutes to make sure that.
Well, you'll have, instead of waiting until after the next item, let's move this, if the board is agreeable, to the end of the agenda today, and that will give you a little bit
time.
We will also need to have the number of your 501c3.
Certainly.
Your nonprofit status.
Certainly.
And preferably, and your attorney, if you can get him here.
David Money?
I don't know who it is.
I think he was here this morning.
Yeah,
just
Madam Chair.
It's David Money.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair, would it be convenient to just call it at 2 o'clock? Because we don't know how long this next item is going to be, and if we got closed session after that, and then.
That would be a good idea. If you would return at 2 o'clock.
Thank you. Okay.
Supervisor Bianchi, if we could also have him, if he has any documentation as to his mission statement, if they have something formal adopted by their board of directors, and any other verification that sets out their mission, that would be helpful.
Thank you very much. With that, we will move on to item C3.
Item C3 is a hearing to consider the appeal and an appeal of the South County Road Improvement Fee by Maria Vista States, 4th District. Recommendations for denial of the appeal.
May we have a staff report, please?
We don't really change that much.
Thank you, Supervisor Bianchi, members of the board. Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. This item is an appeal of the road improvement fee filed by Maria Vista Estates. The county ordinance that established the road improvement fee provides the criteria which must be considered in evaluating a request for adjustment or waiver of the fee based on the state law which enabled the fee in the first place. The appellant has submitted their appeal, which is attached to the staff report, and it's their primary point of appeal is a court case that was decided several years ago involving the city of Modesto and the relationship between these type of fees and vesting tentative map for a subdivision. The county's position is that a vesting subdivision, the premise of a vesting subdivision is that you get to lock in the rules that are in effect at the time the application for subdivision is accepted as a complete application. Our position is that this, the subdivision which contains the lots on which these building permits are located, vested after the adoption of the road improvement fee, and so they vested into the ordinance, which includes with it the provisions for regular update and increase of the fee. Tract 1802 vested in 1990. The fee at that time was $2,420, and the current fee is $6,835. To give you a little background on the court case that's referenced by the appeal, it was filed by a company called Kaufman & Broad, a large home development company in California. The city had an existing fee at the time the subdivision in that case was accepted as a complete application, and it was a relatively modest fee. Between the time that the subdivision vested and the time they sought building permits and were charged a fee, they added other types of activities altogether, including wastewater treatment, public transportation, air quality programs, and administrative costs of the fee program. The court's finding was that the developer could not reasonably know that these kind of changes would occur with the fee that Modesto was charging. Our position is that this project is in a very different situation. We're talking about a fee that was for the road system ever since it was created and continues to be for just the road system. A few changes have occurred to the specific list of projects that are funded, but the vast majority of the increase has to do with the basic increased cost of building roads, both in Napomo and throughout California. The costs have not only to do with the acquisition of property for road widening and new construction, but also the environmental permitting requirements and the basic cost of construction as labor costs rise. In the Kaufman and Broad case, the city of Modesto, I think my characterization would be they dug in their heels a little bit and they took an all or nothing approach. They said, we say that all the money is due, and the court made some findings that indicate that they would have been receptive to if the city had told the court the fees, the projects that we were charging fees for at the time the map vested, if they had just advanced the cost of that forward in time to the time the fees were charged, the court would have been receptive to hearing what portion of the new fee was really due to the increase of the original program versus the added other topics. So we have made an attempt to give your board this background, and the information on this point continues to evolve. We're continuing to research this. So I have some updates to the information since I prepared my slideshow. In 1990, the total cost of the road capital improvements was over $15 million, and the residential fee for each unit was $2,420. If you took that list of capital projects and without change, without adding the other projects that have been added through updates of the study, The cost of those projects today would be $46 million and some change. And if you just took the proportions between those numbers, you would actually end up with a fee that is greater than what we're charging. And that made us all scratch our heads. So between when we prepared the staff report and now, we've been continuing to work on this point, and I have we have an update to Exhibit B, which is in the staff report, in which we've sharpened our pencil a little bit and analyzed in more detail and come up with answers that I think make a little more sense on this point. Some projects have been added to the capital improvement program of the fees. Some other projects have been dropped off the capital improvement program for the fees. Some of them have already been constructed, so we know exactly how much they cost. Some others are in project development right now, so we have fresh estimates of what it will really cost to build them based on a lot more detail. So what I've just passed to you is two versions of the replacement of the table that's on the screen right now. In the first version, we identify the roads that were in the program in 1989 when the fees that were applicable in 1990 at the time the subdivision vested were based on the fees that were adopted in 89. If we take that list of capital projects and bring it forward, if we drop those projects which have been dropped and we lock in the dollar figure of actual cost of the ones that have already been built, the Modesto answer would be that the fee today would be $2,821, and that shows in the lower right of the first page of the handout. The second page is kind of a balancing consideration. Some projects have been dropped out of the original capital improvement program, but other projects have been added, and we feel that they're in balance. So if we just kept all of the projects on the list and advanced them forward to today's construction costs, that would represent a cost of $4,544 per unit. So that's a lot of explanation for a thing that's really just background. It's not our recommendation that your board go this direction, but to put it in the framework of the court's consideration of the Modesto case, this is a point of comparison. So I've already talked about the one other major change between 1990 and now is that we the county changed the general plan for the community with a major update in the mid-1990s.
Is that a mask on this stop sign or?
This is a recommended new traffic control device. We're heading into confusing territory.
Well, I thought that was possibly a sign out at Site 52.
Right. Another point of comparison that we wanted to bring before your board to talk about the relationship between 1990 and present time. We've done a little bit of analysis that to point out that although the road improvement fee is substantially higher than it was in 1990, a big part of its increase of cost is the cost of land between then and now, as we're all painfully familiar with. And that has been a contributing factor to driving up the cost of building roads, but it's also driving up the cost of homes. And when we did this analysis, we find that the proportion of the road fee to the median home price in this county is actually nearly constant. On this graph, the fee itself is the upper line, the dotted line, and it's rising quite sharply. But when you take it as a percentage of median home price, the lower solid line indicates we're hovering right around 1.5% over the entire life history of the fee program. I believe your board received a package from the appellant approximately this dimension late last week, as did we, and I have the ability to give you a brief summary and response to its points as well. In this packet, they've raised three primary issues, and I'll talk about each one. The main issue is the court case involving the status of vesting tentative maps, which I've primarily discussed already. They raised one point about the Planning and Building Department has recognized the vesting status and identified that certain fees are not applicable. And they're trying to say that two different county departments are reaching opposite conclusions from each other about how vesting maps work, but that's not actually the case. The road improvement fee was adopted by the county before this subdivision vested, so therefore it was in effect and its requirements apply. The other fees that are referred to that the planning department evaluated were adopted after this map vested, so these houses will not be required to pay those fees, and it's a very basic difference between those two analyses. Another point that was raised in the late last week package has to do with the relationship between the impact of the project and the amount of the fee. This speaks directly to the points in the ordinance that I had at the very beginning of my presentation. This is the thing that your board can consider in evaluating a request for adjustment or waiver. The appellant is relating to you that the fees as currently calculated do not allocate costs between existing users and new development. Their position is that we are totaling up the cost of all the road improvements that are needed and charging all of the cost to new development, and that's not the case. The circulation study lays out a calculation by which a portion of the cost is attributable to existing deficiency, another portion of the cost is attributable to that traffic which simply passes through the community, and the road improvement fee is just one of the many components of financing the overall capital improvement program. And then the final point that's raised in this package has to do with the timing of payment and the basic difference between paying the fee at the time of issuing the building permit versus the time of collecting it at the certificate of occupancy of the house construction. The state law that enables the fee in the first place sets out the requirements for this. Its basic requirement is that the fee can be charged no sooner than certificate of occupancy unless the county or a city adopting a similar fee makes certain findings that are spelled out in the law. This county has always made those findings in this community as well as five others where we charge this fee ever since the fee has been enacted. And so we have met the tests of the statute and we collect this fee at the time of issuance of building permit. I recommend that your board deny the appeal and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions?
Please, if I may, yes. Would you go a step back on your slides? Go
sure.
Back.
One back.
Did I understand you say we have discretion as where we go with this, or you have to come up with the findings to recommend one way or the other?
Your board has already made the findings in adopting the fee resolution. In this case, the one that's in effect was adopted last fall, establishing that the fees are required to be paid at the time of issuance of building permit. So I consider this point to be moot. But it was raised. It was raised in the big packet. I'm just summarizing and responding.
Do we have other projects? And the most recent was Centex. Mm-hmm. And I believe we treated that applicant with the same way as your recommendation is here today.
Centex is another large home builder that was developing a project in the South County, and they filed an appeal of the road improvement fee resting on the same basis, the Modesto court case. And in your board's consideration of their appeal last fall, you voted to deny the appeal unanimously.
Would Woodlands come into the picture the same way?
Woodlands has not indicated any interest in appealing the road improvement fee.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions of staff? I have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Marshall, in the handout that you gave us just now, you did another comparison of the fees that totals 4,554. You said that was in comparison to the previous adjudication of a lawsuit in Modesto. How does that compare with the 6,835 that you're recommending?
The second page of the handout takes the capital improvement program that was enacted in 1989 and with no change simply advances all of its cost estimates forward to current costs. And if you were to do that and no other change, the fee today would be $4,544. There have been other changes, including detailed knowledge of the specific costs of building some of these road projects. As you can see, there's a column that's headed Caltrans CCI increase. That's construction cost index. These figures have been prepared just simply doing a very generic cost index increase. The reality is there's two large line items on here having to do with Willow Road and the Willow Road interchange. We're in project development on that right now and have already identified that the real figures that would go in that line are 2 to 3 times as much. So that's part of why our real fee at this time is the $6,835. There are some other improvement projects which have been added to the list, some different road improvements than this original list from 1989, but they are approximately in balance with those on this list which are no longer on the list.
Are there any other questions of staff? Okay, seeing none, I will open it to the public. The appellant, and I have a request to speak form from John. Thank you. You will have 10 minutes to make your case, and if anyone else, Kevin Irod is still here, if he's part of the appellant, he comes in that 10 minutes.
He is not here.
Okay.
I mean,
okay. Then he will have 3 minutes later. If you would care to come to the microphone and... No, you have, the appellant goes first. You have to state your name again for the record, please.
Yes, ma'am. John Fricks, Ogden and Fricks. My address is 656 Santa Rosa Street here in San Luis Obispo. I'm an attorney. I represent the appellant, Maria Vista Estates. We have provided a rather voluminous supplemental brief in support of our appeal and provided it to the board as well as Public Works and County Council on Friday. The reason that the supplemental brief, in fact, weighs more than the original brief is because we had not yet received documents pursuant to a California Public Records Act request that would support some of our theories that we believe to be true. And, in fact, once we receive those documents, many of which are attached as exhibits to our letter brief, our theories were confirmed to be true. We are the Modesto case. Mr. Marshall is... understandably, perhaps, but still trying to distinguish a case that really any distinguishing characteristics are immaterial. We had a vesting tentative map. I believe it's in 1989. Doesn't really matter in this case because there was no fee change between 1989 and 1990 in terms of when we vested. At that point in 1989, we as owner or the owner of the property at that time would have been aware of a $2,420 fee, and there were specific projects contained in the circulation study that were applicable at that time. Now, the Modesto case is not only talks about vesting tentative, but the significance of vesting tentative in due process. And I think we all have an idea of what due process is. Certainly, it is advance notice of what charges the government might hit us with. That is, of course, one definition of due process. In this instance, we have a fee ordinance that says, I'm sorry, a fee resolution 89-46 that was established in January of 1989 or adopted in January of 1989 by this board. that set the fee at a certain amount and indicated in Section 3 of that resolution that the fee itself would be determined at the time of the application. And Section 3, therefore, put us and all of the developers or potential buyers of that property on notice that the fee for this project might be $2,420 or is $2,420. Now, the Modesto case talks in great detail about the fact that developers and owners need to be aware of the fees that they are going to be required to pay, especially investing. Now, there are two different types of maps, as I'm sure everyone here recognizes. There are vesting tentative maps, and there are plain tentative maps. And one would say, well, what are the differences? Well, the main difference is vesting locks you in. It locks you in on a set of ordinances and fees at the time when the application is deemed complete. Now, some people, if the fee goes down, well, you're vested. You're locked in. You pay the locked-in rate. If the fee goes up, you're vested. You're locked in. This is the point that the county seems to contend, is that that is not what vesting means, and that is contrary to the opinion of the Kaufman and Brode versus City of Modesto case. Now, there are a number of legal distinctions that I've raised in my supplemental brief that we are essentially the same type of fee. Our fee, we did not have notice, number one, of construction cost index increases. There was a vague notion in a mitigated negative declaration that the fee might change. But it was not with the specificity to satisfy due process under the Kaufman and Brode case that would allow a developer to have some idea what that fee might be. Now, let's assume anyway that, all right, maybe a court would say that's good enough notice. They meant, of course, that the construction cost index would be reached. We dispute that, but let's assume for a moment that a court might say that. Well, it's very, very enlightening to me that if you actually apply the road projects that were a part of that road program fee at that time in 1989, you're looking at a $2,800 fee and not the $6,800 that county staff is asking this body to uphold. They have indicated that we perhaps our vesting rights have gone away, and they don't argue this with much force, so I will mention only in passing, because we've made some minor some changes to the map. Well, to our approved vesting tentative map. The two changes, which some of you may remember, were to go from community water or on-site water and on-site sewer.
Mr. Fricks, your time is half up.
Thank you. One would be we changed over to NCSD water, and then the second change was to NCSD sewer. Now, how that would impact road fees when the number of lots have not changed, and of course this is a per unit charge anyway, is beyond me. And they cite no legal authority, and I know of none, that would support the theory that these changes would somehow unvest or devest these vesting tentative maps. Certainly, we weren't aware that would be the county's position at the time that the applications for changes were processed. Three or four years ago. They also talk about the other change was where the county allowed for phasing. And again, phasing does not affect in any way the road impacts that we're well aware of back in 1989 when this project was vested. Now, they point to the mitigated negative declaration, as I indicated, the mitigated negative declaration contains a essentially a throwaway provision that says it might go up. Well, on what basis? That's not enough notice under the Kaufman Brode versus City of Modesto case to give us our due process rights in light of our vesting tentative. Now, we also argue the nexus and the failure to show contributions from pass-throughs and existing users. One of our struggles, frankly, over the last, since early February on this issue is we are trying to get the documentation from the county and county staff. We have not yet received the 2000 circulation study that we've requested. I don't know what it says. We, in fact, just received the staff report this morning, so I have not had an opportunity to review that in full. My problem is none of the circulation studies, including the circulation study back in 1987, applied the actual existing user component or portion, some amount of cost to that particular staff, I mean, ordinance and resolution. Nor did any of the others until at least 2000. Again, we do not have a copy of the 2000 circulation study, so I can't speak directly to Mr. Marshall's comments. All I'm saying is at the time we vested, all the costs were attributed directly to the new development, none for pass-through, and none that we could see anyway for existing use, when, in fact, there's significant language there that suggests that there were some areas of need and some projects that were needed just to satisfy the existing use and were really irrespective of the potential new development. Now, I appreciate, staff's attempts to give some difference or alternative to the all-or-nothing approach, I don't see any legal relevance in the analysis of comparing the cost of fees in relation to the cost of dirt in this county. Yes, dirt is expensive, but all that does is it squeezes our affordable housing. To then add on to it additional fees, more than are allowed by law in California, will not help in any way the affordable housing crunch that we're hitting in this county. In fact, it has no legal relevance. That's not the test. The test is what are the costs that are going to be attributed to this road fee program vested in 1989, and then possibly if a court would later find that the construction cost index would be appropriate, how that would apply. It has no relation to the amount of the property values or even what ultimately houses are selling for. We ask that you affirm you grant the appeal and allow us to pay $24.20 per unit as we move forward. I do note that staff we received and provided as one of the exhibits to the supplemental filing on April 29th, that staff is considering making a recommendation shortly to bump these fees from $6,800 to over $11,000. While that is not yet before the board, I mean, that will only exacerbate this problem. Right now, we're looking at this as a $350,000 problem for Maria Vista Estates in the differential between $6,835 versus $2,420 per unit. If that goes to $11,000, we're going to be looking at $700,000 or $800,000 worth of potential dispute. I asked on behalf of Maria Vista Estates that you grant the appeal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You will have an opportunity to respond to any comments that are
Thank you.
Made. I only have one other request to speak for him, however. Kevin Irott, please. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, sir. Supervisor Bianchi. I'm Kevin Irott. I'm on the Board of Directors with the Home Builders Association of the Central Coast. And I would ask that you uphold the appeal on behalf of the appellant. The issue that we see as an organization is whether or not the vested rights that are relied upon by members of our association or any developer in San Luis Obispo County are relied upon at a time when somebody can estimate what their costs are going to be in a project, obviously has an impact on whether or not they can go forward with the project and whether or not the project's going to be viable in the future. And what I think the county needs to decide is whether or not they want to, in the opinion of our association, violate, provisions of the Subdivision Map Act would have statewide implications, of course, for our organization. But whether or not you can increase fees based upon these rather, we think, nebulous findings within the conditions of approval for this project. So I would, as an organization and as an individual, ask that you uphold this appeal. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I have no other request to speak forms on this item. Mr. Fricks, if you would care to make another statement, you may, or you may not, as the case may be.
Briefly, I also ask that we do come to a resolution on today on the appeal. We do have our project is moving forward. We do have other proceedings that may address this issue in the future, but we do ask that the Board of Supervisors not table this or continue the appeal in any way, but go ahead and make a decision today. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. At this time, does staff wish to respond to any comments that were made?
I don't feel I have any items in my notes that weren't covered in my presentation, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
What about the $11,000?
Okay, certainly. It's a good question. We were looking at some recent calculations that indicated that level of service at the Teff Street interchange has had risen to above our threshold of acceptable level of service. And we were exploring a lot of alternatives for what to do about it so that current applications could proceed and be able to complete their environmental determination that they could move forward without a finding of significant impact. One of the things that was being explored, and we provided the appellant a copy of a draft report that ended up not ever getting finalized, we were exploring a fairly substantial increase in the fee. We even, for lack of a better term, talked about calling it a surcharge. If you want to move forward while we're working out this problem, you can pay a lot more money that will help accelerate our cash flow. We know what the improvement is that will fix the problem with the Teff Street interchange, but it will take a certain amount of time to get through Caltrans' process to make it happen. And the question was, could we allow development to occur during that length of time and say that it had mitigated its impact? And this was an alternative that was being explored.
But there's nothing definitive at this time.
We redid the calculations using some improved information and identified that the level of service was really just below the magic line instead of just above it. And so with a big sigh of relief, we took everybody off the hook. We haven't moved that item forward that we were talking about. We're continuing to look for the big picture solution, but for right now we're back in plan A. Everybody pays the current road improvement fee.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Shadjan.
Thank you.
Just to follow up on that, Mr. Marshall, that I'm not looking forward to that. We just recently, last year, we did a 200-500% increase, and to come back again for another 100% increase, I hope we'll have an opportunity to work on that. I did want to have ask the council. I know that we look at Mr. Marshall as our traffic engineer, but obviously we have a legal case in front of us. What we heard, do you have anything to comment on Mr. Marshall's presentation? Just we had Mr. Fritz comment on Mr. Marshall's recommendation. I wonder, I know we don't want to turn this into a court, but a very short comment.
Thanks, Chairman Bianchi. I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. This is a case where the developer actually sued the county over these fees and has had us before Judge Hilton in the Superior Court before we ever got to this hearing. Of course, one of the things that the county argued was that the board needed the opportunity to have a chance to look at the fee and determine what the appropriate fee was before the court could get involved, and the courts agreed with that. The court also agreed as to the timing that the county has imposed the fee at the appropriate time, that is the time that building permits are pulled rather than the time that the houses are finally inspected. That was an issue that the applicant was contending. As you know, we basically disagree with the legal theory that the applicants are proceeding under, and that is that the Kaufman and Broad case is quite a bit different than the case that we're talking about. In between the time when the city of Modesto first enacted its fee and the time that they attempted to impose the fee on Kaufman and Broad, they added things like air quality, county administration. They completely changed the nature of the fee, and that caused the fee to go up. And so the developer went in and said, hey, under due process, as Mr. Fricks was referring to earlier, I had no way of knowing you were going to add air quality. I had no way of knowing you were going to make me pay for county administration and that kind of thing. In fact, in this case, the fee has always related to the cost of mitigating traffic impacts in the South County of this county, and that's all it has ever done. There was an initial list of projects that the county proposed to build, and that list is dynamic. It has to change when we determine which subdivision goes before another and where development's actually going to occur. And because of those changes, we have had to add projects to the list and take projects off the list, but we've never changed the basic nature of the fee. And anyone who bought a piece of property would know that the fee cannot remain stable and still attempt to account for the impacts of traffic in Nipomo. I would want the board to consider seriously this case, because this fee, believe it or not, I really believe is for the developers. This fee allows us to mitigate the impacts of new subdivisions. If this fee doesn't work, there is no other way to do that. Developers of individual subdivisions can't go out and build the roads that mitigate the impacts of their project. The only way to do it is for them all to work together and contribute to a fund that is applied toward approving these projects. If they want to get rid of this fee, then they're going to find themselves in a situation where they're not able to mitigate their traffic impacts, and it's going to be difficult for the board to approve new subdivisions.
Okay, I have no further lights.
Madam Chair, I'm going to support the staff's recommendation. Just don't want to open a can of worms where we discount everybody. We don't have any money to go forward with any of our projects.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, may we, all in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none.
Okay. I'm sorry.
So may we have an introduction of item D1, please?
Item D1 is a request for the land use element amendment application LRP 2004-00015 Addison to amend the South County Inland Area Plan by changing the land use category on an approximately 12,240 square foot site from commercial retail to residential single family. The purpose of this request is to allow the applicant to continue the existing use of a single family residence for property located at 121 North Oak Glen Avenue in the community of Nipomo, 4th District.
And Brian, you practically have to swallow that microphone to be heard.
Okay. Good morning, members of the board. Brian Pedrotti, staff planner. The proposed project is to authorize the processing of a general plan amendment application to amend the South County Area Plan of the land use element for a 12,240 square foot lot to change from commercial retail to residential single family. The purpose is to continue the single family residential use without the restrictions on use or development on continuing single family improvements. The property is located at 121 Oak Glen Avenue. Is approximately 300 feet north of Teff Street in the community of Nipomo. The property has a commercial retail land use category. To the northwest, north, and northeast is residential single family. To the southwest, south, and southeast is commercial retail. It's located on the east side of Highway 101 in Old Town Nipomo. And there's a single family residence to the north. Some vacant commercial to the southwest and southeast, Chevron and McDonald's to the south, and a tree farm to the northeast. The primary issue identified would be the amount of commercial in the Nipomo area. This graphic identifies the relationship of the property to the existing land use categories and how it fits in geographically. The property is located right here at the boundary. There are three major issues. Is it consistent with the land use element purpose and character statements? Is there a need to designate more land in the residential single-family category in Nipomo? And does this represent a significant loss of commercial retail? Staff found in the through their analysis that it's generally consistent with the purpose and character statements. For the major issues number 2 and 3, staff has identified a limited amount of commercial in the Nipomo area. However, this is a quite small section of land and is developed with an existing single family home. So your authorization options are to authorize the application as requested or do not authorize for processing. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of staff?
Not a question, or I'll wait for the comments later, but when you have an opportunity, would you put the picture? I think it will. And is there any chance we can? Yes, thank you. A little more? Thank you, Madam Chair. That does justice to what I want to say, that it is surrounded by residents. It is a residential. I've been on site. I've talked to the gentleman who's the applicant. This comes to us with the support of the community, and I have absolutely no problem with this project because, well, what we're going to do in this case, help the gentleman to be able to finance his residence. And years from now, if we get to a point where retail becomes a must, they can always, you know, come through and do another GPA. But as is today, it's there. It exists. It's there to serve the residential purposes. There's absolutely no negative comment that I've heard from the community. And I'm glad to see that the staff feels the same way from your findings and also my findings. I have a couple more things to say after we hear the public and or the applicant.
I see no more lights, so at this time I'll open it to the public. There, I have no request to speak forms. Do either of you two gentlemen wish to make a statement? Okay. With that, I'll close it to the public and bring it back for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Second.
I want to move that we approve this, and I just want to introduce Brian. Would you stand up so everybody knows who the applicant is? That's the young gentleman back there. And with a motion, staff, can you help me? This is so simple in my thinking. Can we expedite this by any and get an A-plus on our efforts? That since it's almost effortless, of course, that's easy for me to see. I don't have to do the legwork that you have to do.
Thank you. Cammie Griffin, County Planning. There is a process that's required to be followed, including an environmental determination that in this case will probably be fairly simple, and then a public hearing in front of Planning Commission and Board. I don't see a problem with putting it on one of the cycles that occurs later in this year. It's not a complicated project that I'd be saying we'll be back to you 2 years from now, but there is an actual process.
Won't happen in 2 weeks.
No.
Or 2 months.
No.
It seems like it's again. Can you fast track it? Because it's so simple, and it's there's a need for us to move forward. It's been a while till it got in front of us, but
she gets my PD ordinance.
I was just going to say it'll be put into the staff planner's workload, and because it is a simpler item, we might be able to make sure that it gets on. If we have a cycle that goes, a general plan amendment cycle that goes in the fall, at the latest it would be the winter cycle.
Thank you. With that, Madam Chair, I approve the process.
Second.
We already had a second, but since it was made before the motion was made, I think we'll take Mr. Lindahl's second instead. All in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Aye. Aye. We're just trying to fast track it.
Any opposed? I hear none opposed. With that, it'll be a while, but it'll get there. With that, I have no request to speak forms for closed session at all. So we will go into, how long will it take?
Should take about. We're coming back at 2.
We're coming back at 2 anyway. So we'll have a report out at 2 o'clock.
Can we meet after 2?
How's that? Okay.
Bob?
With that, we will go into closed session. Be back at 2.
Advisory Council meets the second Monday of every month at 7 p.m. at the PG&E Community Center, 6588 Ontario Road in Avila Beach. More information can be found on their website at www.avilavalley.org. The Cayuga Citizens Advisory Council meets the first Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m. at the Cayuga Spets Hall, 10 Cayuga Drive in Cayuga. More information can be found on their website at www.